Before we start, I want to make a few housekeeping announcements. We have asked for French Francophone translation services, and we have the facility. So whoever can present in French should do so. The slides will be in English. We arranged that. And so, because we wanted to encourage the Francophone participation. My own French is so broken that I don't really want to inconvenience the translators trying to translate my broken French into broken English. So it's probably better to do it one way only. We had a bit of a venue issue here, so the agenda that as posted is not exactly the one that we're going to have. If one of the speakers wishes to rearrange their timing, they must please come to me early that we can do that, so if they want to attend the opening ceremony. We have a lunch. I think it's boxed lunch paid for by CIRA. This time they haven't asked for the usual update from our sponsor, so they don't have a presentation. There's two small things that I wanted to say in particular to the non-local participants. I had last night a severe bout of diarrhea, which is perfectly normal by adapting to the local situation. There's nothing wrong with that. If people get it, don't get worried. Swallow enough Imodium. It's not a big deal. I also find it's some people are worried about these things. I'm a medical doctor by profession, so I come from an African country, so I have a bit of experience. There's nothing to worry about. It's just an inconvenience. The other thing is, CORE gave us very nicely these green armbands. We're not really supposed or necessary to wear them during the day. I just put it on this or kept it on this morning so that you know what I'm talking about. But it is actually helpful to wear them at night. Depending on what hotel you're staying, if it's cool and air-con, the mosquitoes don't want to really go there, but it's a good thing to wear this in the evening. Okay, we have in our last meeting or meeting on Sunday talked a little bit about a mission and vision of our working group. We've put a first draft up. Anybody who is interested in this, please review and provide input. Our working group is basically a CCNSO working group. It's chartered by the CCNSO, but the topics we discuss are quite applicable, for example, to small GTLD applicants. So we have always been very open to other constituencies to join us, and in the future I would like to encourage this a little bit more because we have got specific expertise from which others may well, especially smaller applicants or deserving applicants as they call it, may benefit. Our first speaker is INDNS, Knip Medien. Carsten Schiefner is going to talk us about their commercial but free product. Just to make sure that you all know what we're talking about, they are the one who gave us this nice little laser pointer in the bag. If at the discussion somebody from the aisle wants to talk, we'll have, of course, the handheld. But there is enough seats at the moment to sit on a microphone.
Good. Yeah, good morning, everybody, and thank you, Eberhard, for the introduction. As he said already, my name is Carsten Schiefner, and I'm giving this presentation on behalf of Knip Medien und Kommunikation. It's a German company, and I'm going to talk about a particular service, Iron DNS, which is a DNS anycast service. What is the agenda of today, of this morning, for the, I guess I have 20 minutes, for the next upcoming 20 minutes? It's a brief explanation about what Iron DNS is and how we have what the program is to fund registries in emerging markets with that particular anycast cloud. And the second part is simply a brief introduction how DNSSEC is made easy with Iron DNS. So, the sponsor program for emerging markets. What is Iron DNS? Iron DNS is a leading DNS service. It is not a software you can buy. It is a service you can buy or can get for free if you're eligible according to the criteria. Iron DNS just doesn't base on any code platform. It's been rewritten completely from scratch, and by that it's an entirely independent name server software. It's built robust to ward off any future threats in terms of DDoS attacks, etc. And it can be a supplement for your existing name server infrastructure, as well as it can be used as a complete replacement for your name service infrastructure. So either way, you want to have it. The goal of the program I'm talking to you about right now, the sponsor program for emerging markets, is to make the advantages Iron DNS has available to registries that currently are not in a financial position to pay for such a high-class service. So what comes with the free package? The package includes an anycast cloud with 5 globally distributed nodes. It has V4 as well as V6 switched on by default. The provisioning simply happens through a SOAP interface or just a usual classic AXFR with TSIC, if you'd like to. And it also comes with a DNSSEC engine, if you need that, in the case that you would just provide or set up the zone, and Iron DNS is supposed to actually sign the zone and populate the name servers with the signed zone. Otherwise, we just would redistribute an already signed zone. Question, who can apply? You need to be a ccTLD registry. You need to be a non-profit organization. You need to have less than 100,000 delegations under your top-level domain, your country code top-level domain, and you need to be from a non-OECD country. These are the 4 criterions to apply for the Iron DNS sponsor program. How to apply? That is super easy. There's no bureaucracy whatsoever. You just talk to me. And by the way, you have my business card in your bag already. It looks like this. So in case you're not willing to, write down my email address and or my phone number, just look at this little card in your pack and send me an email or phone me. So, second part, a DNSSEC made easy. So, the initial situation without signing the zone is like you have a hidden master and it feeds your secondaries right now. The new situation with DNSSEC is you still have your hidden master and it feeds Iron DNS, and Iron DNS DNSSEC engine signs the zone, and then Iron DNS provisions all the secondaries, that is the anycast cloud as well as your secondaries. How would that look like? The initial situation without signing the zone is you have your hidden master on the left-hand side, then you have your bunch of our unicast secondaries, and the users of your zone would just access the secondaries. With Iron DNS, the hidden master is still there, but now it would provision the DNSSEC engine of Iron DNS, and the Iron DNS engine would then provision the Anycast secondaries as well as the Unicast secondaries. And so the users of your top-level domain would then access either way the Unicast secondaries or the Anycast cloud. I would like to now switch over to a simple demo just to show you how easy it is to set up a zone with Iron DNS and to enable that zone for DNSSEC. That is like how the configuration user interface looks like. You just log on. Then you might readjust the language again. That picks German initially, so I just switched that to English. Then you go to the panel on the left-hand side. You say create. You select the product that is all name service and DNSSEC activated. There might be more products than just one. The zone you're actually intending to create, we call it demo. That is the top-level domain, a top-level domain.demo, just for the purpose of showing how to do it. You need to add at least one source name server. That is the hidden name server right now. And as we know it, it's called ns-demo, dns.net. Go next. So here it says that the zone has actually successfully been fetched from the hidden primary. So that was okay. Then we have the name servers that are actually configured in the zone of the hidden primary. And you can tick on, tick off the name servers you want to provision at free will. And you click next again. And then the system says that the zone on the source name service contains name server records for all selected Iron DNS servers. That is okay as well. Then you say, yes, I do want to have DNSSEC enabled. And then the last bit is what is not yet important here is that you can send access control, can set up access control lists for your servers, et cetera, et cetera. So we just say create. And that's essentially it. So your zone has just been created. The .demo top-level domain has just been created on the name server that has been specified. And just to give you a quick overview, and as you can clearly see, it's available already, fully DNS signed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That is how easy Iron DNS would make it for you to create an Anycast cloud as well as to DNSSEC sign it. And again, I'm happy to talk to you if you're interested in that very program, but I'm also happy to take any questions you might have right now. Thank you.
Okay. One thing I must say, we run .na on Iron DNS as one of our secondaries. We don't use the platform, the signing platform, but this works very well. It gave us an opportunity to learn how to do T-SIG, though. Any questions?
Hello. Bonjour.
I am Okay, yeah. Thank you for your presentation. I would like to know where can you upload this?
Complete, très bien.
You must wait for the singing.
English translation, what channel is it?
What channel is the English to French translation?
One.
Okay.
Could you... Encore une fois, s'il vous plaît.
But I can't hear him. I don't hear him.
Je peux parler. Bon, je
demande. I'm asking if I cannot hear. I'm sorry.
Is the free software?
Is the free software up on the internet yet? I think.
It's not a free software. It's a service. So you cannot download the software. You can sign up for the service. The software itself is not public.
Lalan Jemakian from NICMG, Madagascar. I want to know what's happened when the delegation is more than 100,000.
The limit on 100,000?
The number of delegation.
We just had to set it somewhere because there might be registries that are non-OECD as well, but they might be just larger. So we just had to set a limit somewhere to really have the program ready for emerging markets. Does that answer your question?
My name is George Sechi. I'm interested in the move, and I want to know whether it's working on NS2 simulator, and if it is working on it, do you have a website where you can process and get it? Maybe you pay for it and then you have it at your website.
I'm not entirely sure whether I got your question correctly.
What I'm saying is that if somebody is interested in your software, the demo software, is there any page at your site where maybe you can go through the process and maybe pay for it and have it downloaded?
Again, the software itself is not downloadable. It's not public. It's a service. You would sign up for service instead of paying for the software. So the service is actually run by KNIP, a German company, and you would sign up for the service, but you won't be able to download or buy the software itself, like the source code or what have you.
We have a remote question, so I'd like to give precedence to the remote questions if I can.
Hello. Sabine is wondering if there are any details about the software available?
Not to the public. I mean, what do you mean in detail? So what does she mean?
Let's see if she replies.
Okay. I guess, the programming language is mostly Java. So if that answers the question. Yeah.
She's typing.
Okay.
So then we can take in the meantime Mark Elkins.
A quick question, a techie question, as a techie day. The DNSSEC, I take it that's automatically NSEC 3 over the opt-out. And what backend do you use for signing interest?
The backend actually is self-written as well. So it's not a third-party piece of software.
Not DNS, Open DNSSEC or something?
No. And what was the other one?
NSEC 3 opt-out?
Right now, I can't answer that one. I have to take that one home, how to opt out of that. I can't answer that right on the spot. Sorry.
Any more questions? Thank you. Oh, sorry.
Bonjour.
I can't, this is just so bad. Can you hear? Does your service take count of the renewal? I am so sorry, there's so much echo. I cannot hear what he's saying in the cabin. Can you? Can you have him repeat the question? I'm so sorry. There's such an echo. It has to do with the renewal of signing on the zone. There's such an echo. It's.
As I said, it's a fully featured DNSSEC suite. So basically, anything can be configured according to your needs. So, yeah.
Merci.
Thank you.
Good morning. My question is, how much would it cost for an organization to benefit from this service?
So the question is, how much would it be if you actually would sign up and would like to pay for the service? That actually depends on the amount of registrations you would have under your CC, under your top-level domain, and I'm happy to take that question offline with you. As I said, the input variable is the number of delegations you have.
Okay, so now we come to something interesting. That's not that your topic wasn't interested, but that's the type, the agenda item that for Jay. Jay, oh, I kicked myself. I'm sorry about that. But Jay Daly from .nz will speak about formal benchmarking of registries. But Jay, we have had this in the past. Jay sometimes comes up with interesting stuff on short notice, and I don't really know what the topic is going to be until the day of the presentation, so I put the agenda item something interesting.
Hello. Okay, well, it's not now, so you... This one's working fine. Hello. Back from there? Hello. You should speak into it like that. The hole down there. Well, it's fine now. It's fine. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. But if you go down there and move it around, it gets a little bit different. going there will get a little bit iffy. That's why you have to speak to him through the microphone like that. We can't tell them because it doesn't work from there because it's not meant to. But that's... this all microphones, you speak straight into there. I can't do... And I haven't got enough system on to replace it straight away. But that's, this is fine if they talk like that. Well, yeah, okay. Well, but it's fine. It's fine now. That's
there, but that doesn't see it.
Yeah. Even there, it's not too bad.
Mine knows it's there.
2-2-2
Mine knows it's there, definitely, but that doesn't. That's got somebody else's computer on it.
Yeah, that could be it.
It's just not switched over to mine good morning. I'm Jay Daly from the .nz registry, talking about formal benchmarking of registries. This is the current state of ccTLD benchmarking. Because each ccTLD works within its own country, it really is only ever benchmarked against its own country and can be world famous within its own country without really having to be scrutinised very easily. I want to explain a little problem that we had recently that goes to the heart of benchmarking. Benchmarking is something that I've been talking with Jacques Latour from CIRA about for some while now. And here is a practical example of where it would have helped us. Earlier this year, we published our DNSSEC practice statement for consultation, and in that, we proposed that we would use a key signing key length of 1,152 bits. We then went out to consult with our local community of network operators about this, and we had complaints saying that most other top-level domains are using 2,048 bits, so we should as well. Now, we argued that 1152 bits is extremely secure, that it will not be broken within the lifetime of the known universe, and that we were quite happy to use that. And in New Zealand, there is one world-famous cryptographer who we got involved in the debate, and he agreed with us very strongly that 1152 was quite secure. But the community were not satisfied. They felt this was a perception issue, and the security of 1152 bits was not the issue. The issue was that this was not the same as that being used by the root. Some members of the community also wanted us to have the same security theatre that the root has of DNA tests, videos, presidential visits and other things before you're allowed to sign the root, but we had to draw the line somewhere. And we agreed to move to 2048 bits, even though that imposes a resource implication for us, even though we didn't feel it was more secure to handle that perception issue. But the perception issue is what is best practice and what is not best practice within the community. And I was able to say things like, well, if you look at the Brazilians, who are very clever people, they are using a key signing key of 1152, and they were able to say, yes, but if you look at so-and-so, they're using 2048. And so I think this is something that we could put a lot more effort into understanding across us as a community as to what is best practice and what is not best practice. We are in a changing environment where new things keep going wrong and new services appear from time to time. We are close to implementing DNSSEC, and have taken longer to do it than we thought we would, because so many of the early implementers have had problems that we have now had to incorporate into our systems as a learning exercise that we didn't know about. Also, people keep inventing new things, and so the bar for being a good registry keeps rising higher. And that is something that you can only understand if you keep in good contact with other registries to see what they're doing. So the way forward, I think, is for us to use benchmarking, and that will help us answer certain questions. The first of these is, what are our peers doing? How are we placed in relation to them? We can come to meetings like this, I can talk to many of my peers, I can find out what they're doing, but I will only ever get an understanding of certain elements. There is a requirement for us to understand across the whole board of our activities what our peers are doing, and in a more formal method than just talking to people. I would like to be able to know what is industry best practice. I would like to have a good argument with many of my colleagues that says that 1152 bits is just good enough and 2048 is excessive, and video cameras inside your root, inside your key signing key ceremony is laughable. Then I would also like us to have goals that we should set, and I'd like to know that those goals will be effective. It's all very well setting goals, but it's better if I can set goals that other registries have proved are good goals to have. I should also like to know what I should be measuring. Again, I can measure many things, and we do measure things, but if there is evidence from other registries that certain measurements increase quality, then I would like to know that. And finally, I would like to demonstrate to my local community that we are adopting best practice, or if we are not doing it, that is clear and that we have a plan to address that. Now, within our industry and within registries, we are already lost in best practice acronyms. There are many already used by registries. We have the IT Infrastructure Library for IT Service Management. We have COBIT, which gives a framework for control over IT. We have ISO 9000 for a quality framework, ISO 27000 for information security, and ISO 31000 for risk management, potentially many more. But what we do not have is a registry-specific benchmarking or quality standard, and that is what Jack and I have been talking about developing. Now, most benchmarking standards incorporate something called levels of maturity. These were defined by the US Software Engineering Institute some years ago and have been used in many other models since. I have adopted a version of it here that is slightly different from theirs. Number 5 on this list is something new I have added, and they have a number 0, which is for low-quality work, which I have dropped. One of the interesting things about registries is that we must all operate to a very high standard, and I think the standards that we set ourselves and we need to operate to are generally higher than many other industries because of the important jobs we do, and so levels of maturity in respect of that need to be shifted up a level. So the lowest level of maturity for any individual element of a registry is that it is just repeatable. Often this is a homegrown approach with little external reference. There are still manual intervention in some processes, and much of the understanding is intuitive or has come from the experience of the staff who are developing these. That's how many registries, in fact, I think that is how every registry has started. The next level then is defined, where everything is now automated, it is documented and it is communicated, so it is now a professional service. The next level then is managed, where adding on to this, the level 2, we have now monitoring and measurement and incorporation of some best practice. Then the fourth level that adds on to the previous levels as well is optimized. This is where the system adopts all known best practice and just works. It is a very stable developed system. And then the fifth level, which I have added just for us, is advanced, which is where people are advancing the field and delivering true excellence. So they are doing new things that the rest of us look at and think, wow, that is something I would like to be doing. And I will give some examples of these later on. So I've got four pages of possible elements and some examples of what we might look at. And these are all registry specific and largely technology specific. So the first category is DNS. And we may wish to look at the five levels of maturity for name server placement and connectivity. For name server software, whether we run bind or other versions of software, how many varieties that we run, how we manage those. The name server performance, how quickly it responds to the queries that are put and where it responds to those from. Name server capacity, is it running at 5% of its maximum load? How much more? At what point of provisioning, at what point is a new server provisioned? Then we have name server resilience. How well will our name server cluster survive failure of one or more nodes? Then we have zone file transfer. How often we transfer the zones, how securely we transfer, what forms of checks we do for zone file generation possibly as well. Maybe that's a separate item. And then DNS monitoring. So to give you some examples, for DNS monitoring, level two may be that we're all running DSC or equivalent on each server. Level three may be that we now have central aggregation of those DSC logs so that we can examine DNS traffic data from a central position across all servers. Level four may be that every single DNS query is logged. And level five may be that we are developing our own expert tools to analyze this. Now, this goes much broader than just ccTLDs. RIPE NCC have recently written some software for analyzing DNS queries in large parallel clusters, which is quite an impressive piece of software, and that's what I would regard as being level five. And then, for example, with name server software, level four may be that a registry operates three or more name server implementations, so bind, NSD, and Ultra Daemon or something like this, and then is actively involved in the development of some of these. And level five, which probably only VeriSign and the Czech registry have achieved, is a custom-written name server. So, possible elements number two, looking at registry. We have registry protocols. Many of us in registries start off with our own proprietary protocol and then migrate to EPP at some point. And so this captures that migration. Transaction performance and transaction capacity, straightforward for registering, maintaining and renewing domain names. Registry system resilience, what happens in the in terms of failure, what guarantee of uptime is there. Registrar connection management, which I will talk more about. Availability checkers as a separate piece of software, which many people now run, and it would be useful to have some understanding of best practice around those. And then IDN support and DNSSEC support as two new emerging technologies that would be useful for us to look at. So possible elements number three, who is, which again is an important service for us. What form of rate limiting or access control we have, maybe those two should be combined together. What features are available? Some of the things that impress me with other registries, for example, the Japanese and the Danes accept flags to their whois that controls the output of their whois. And then we have security as another issue. Security reviews, you know, firewalls, intrusion detection systems, penetration testing. We then have the registrar interface security and possibly support for registrant lock, which we may not agree should be on the list yet. So to give you some more examples, for security reviews, level one would be no reviews. Level four will be scheduled frequent external reviews of security, registry operations, and IT management. The review results then being published to the community. And level five would be active in developing registry benchmarking, so coming to help me with doing this work. Then registrar interface security, an example may be level four. All connections from registrars are from whitelisted IP addresses, use client certificates and or public key cryptographic signatures, and all interfaces are penetration tested regularly. No idea what level five is, but level four sounds hard enough. And then the final one of possible elements are infrastructure, database resilience. For example, talking about my own registry now, we run a multi-master database with no transaction loss at all. That's, I think, quite different from many others that do replicated databases. Then internet connectivity, and then team specialisms, which of course may only apply to larger organisations who can afford to have people with different specialisms. And then services, finally, what type of support is provided to registrars out of hours, an online system, you know, your home phone number, these things. And then the quality of your website as well, whether you provide documentation on it, statistics, other things. I mean, these, as I begin to get to the end of the list, this isn't necessarily as well defined as some of the others, but I think you still get an understanding from this. So each of the elements for each maturity level within that element requires certain measurements to be taken and a minimum performance against those. So this is quite a detailed standard. So for example, for name server performance, you would need to measure the number of dropped queries, and you would need to ensure that no more than a certain number of those queries were dropped. You would need to measure the millisecond or shorter response time and guarantee a minimum of that. For security reviews, you'd have to deliver a certain number of penetration tests per year for one of the levels, say for level four or level three or something of these. Now, it's important to note that one size does not fit all. Not everyone is the same, and people should set their expected level appropriately for their size. Only the very biggest can aim for level 5 across the board. Certainly within .nz, we could not aim for level 5 across the board. We are a team of 5 people, a registry of 470,000 domains, and it would be unrealistic for us to aim for that. This should not be seen as something that pushes people to have to achieve level 5 on everything. The business priorities of the registry will determine the goals that are set. So, who would do this? Now, lots of work is needed to set this up. It would then need testing in some registries, and there would need to be accreditation of consultants who can assess against the model, because we need to ensure there is a quality in assessment. We do not want just anybody claiming that they can assess in this and travelling the world doing that form of assessment. This also needs continual development because, as I said earlier, the landscape changes. Now, Jacques and I are very intent on developing this, but we would very much welcome any other volunteers who are keen to get involved. So, any questions at all?
Simon.
Thanks. Simon McKellar from Nominet. Jay, I really like this. I think it's a great idea. just a thought came across as I was as you were presenting was I sat on the high security TLD group for quite a while, and they did quite a lot of the sort of thinking around how do we group together some of the best bits of ISO, some of the best bits of COBIT, and wrap them into a registry standard. Now, HSTLD was all about a very, very high secure domain, but it occurred to me there was some quite useful stuff that might be worth lifting from some of the work they did do. Not all of it, but some of it might be useful.
I saw this as complementing the ISO standards and COBIT. We already use COBIT internally, for example, and I know many others are using ISO 9000, for example. So rather than us looking at things that were generic, such as security, This was really just to pick out things that are very specific to registries, which no other standard would do. If there is anything in there that does that, then yes, that would be useful. There are some other sources. There are the contracts that have been put out for, say, the .NET registry some years ago that have certain performance standards in them. There are some of the bids that have been put in by people for running these things. There's a lot of this understanding of what the best practice is around. So I think an effort needs to be made to accumulate that information from across the board.
Nigel?
Thank you, Eberhard. I'm just struggling with the headsets at the moment for the translation. You mentioned you're looking for volunteers. I'd like to volunteer one of our people, Mark, who's actually on listening online at the moment. So perhaps we can get together afterwards on that.
Thank you. Thank you, Nigel.
Mark?
If you need more Marks.
That's not that Mark. It's the other Mark.
No. If you need more Marks, I'm also Mark.
Okay. Thank you.
Any remote questions, Christina? All right. Thank you very much. As usually, quite interesting and forward-looking. I maybe have one question. How does this tally with the performance requirements that ICANN puts out for the Gs compare with that?
I think it would need to integrate those together somehow. I'm not certain. I would hope that the end result would be that the performance requirements that ICANN puts out will be based on our model rather than the other way around. But it's something we need to work through.
Okay, thank you very much. The next presentation is from the ARC, the African Registry Consortium. It's about designing a registry software in Africa. We have two presenters. One will present part of it in French, and the other one will present part of it in English, I hope.
Bonjour tout le monde.
Hello everyone. I can hear myself. I don't hear him. Oh, pardon. This is Dave is everybody from RSC, Consortium African Consortium, has shown the interest at the Commission. We are the first sponsored registrar that will be based in Africa. On African technology, we have 16 years of experience in the registry, and we have developed our own system, IPP system. We operate the CO.Z in South Africa, the biggest in Africa. We have 700 domain, and we are having a choice position in the top 20 register in the world. The model put in place by ARC to operate on the continental registry at Point Africa with the following element: the promotion of CCLD African. It's a mutual platform for the CCLD and an infrastructure for hosting the DNS. The development of the registrant market in Africa and the resellers of domain name, the strategies of marketing and the technical tool and training. It's also an excellent center to train experts in DNS and to have extra revenues through this registry for nonprofit also organization. It's an honor for me to present the innovation in the registry system in Africa. the objective, the goal of ARC is to give value to the business in Africa. It's an inclusive model for all the stakeholders in Africa. From today's presentation, I will let Dave speak so he can explain what the system is.
I'm David, one of the developers at ARC. We decided when we were looking at registry systems that there was nothing that met our need in terms of a registry system. And most of that came from the fact that when you took a registry system from the market, you got the policy with it. And in that, we decided that we wanted to develop a registry system where the policy was defined as a configuration and not part of the system design. And from that, we have developed our own registry system. The basic layout of our system is a EPP message service handler, which receives the EPP messages from our clients. It does SSL management. It does the XML validation. And it does a... It communicates those messages back to our registry engine. Our registry engines run a policy as a configuration, and we can have multiple concurrent policies running on our registry engines. So we can have a financial policy, a core policy, and most importantly for existing registries, a legacy policy. This allows us to migrate our existing clients from our previous protocol into an EPP environment. How we've designed the registry software is that the registry software is the same for all of our servers, but the policy we run on each of the servers is different, and they can interact with each other. So our core policy can receive requests from our clients and delegate functions like name server checking and financial requirements to different registry engines running different policies. This allows us to build scalability and redundancy in the system. Because the policy is such a big portion of the system, we've developed our own policy editor that allows us to design these policies that we run on our servers. In front of us is an example where you can see on the left-hand side are the objects, then the command, and then we step through the activities in traversing the tree. On the right-hand side, you can see we have where you can put in commands that get run in that activity. You have autocomplete and documentation appearing for the function. That comes straight out of the Python library as in the PyDoc format. In addition, you can see there that for the example here in front of us, dispatch event lets us delegate a function at this point in the policy to another server by just filling in the policy identifier at the end of the last parameter. The idea was to make this extensible. If you decide to write your own accounting functions, you can easily integrate it into the system and have all the same features, autocomplete and documentation, from your own library by just including it using the policy editor. Here is policy implementation is very important for organizations where they've got a written policy. And being able to take a piece of written policy and put underneath it the actual written code for the policy editor is very important. You can then, every time you see that rule, you can associate the piece of policy with it. We also have a function where you can ask this policy editor to generate a policy document from the code. So you can go from a edited policy to a written policy as well. We keep to open standards. The whole system is written using open standards, so the policy is actually XML behind the scenes. you can drag nodes out of it, and you end up with XML like this, and you can drag the XML back into the policy editor. It makes it very easy to share pieces of policy with each other. We also have tools for merging policy changes. So if you have several live systems and you have a test system and you want to merge changes into the live system, you can see that we have a policy merging system. We also thought that if you're going to edit a policy, it's very important to be able to test. And the policy editor has a registry test editor where you can script an EPP command, expect certain responses, and then issue further commands. This can go on and on so that you can have a full test suite for your policy, which means that you can make changes on the one side and test them on the other side, just to make sure that it behaves the way you expect. We've also got an automated accreditation system, and this is just how we've defined things. It's a simple example of how the system works. On the left-hand side is an XPath check for the command received. On the right-hand side is an XPath check for what we look for in the response. If we find a request with matching response message, we can tick that check off. Obviously, these are very simple examples, and you can include additional requirements to make sure that you've got exactly what you're looking for. As I said, we've stuck to all the standards. The system is completely EPP compliant, RFC compliant when you get it. Of course, with a policy editor, you can obviously make it RFC compliant. We've developed the system and implemented it for the co.za domain. They have 700,000 registrations. This is the statistics for September. You can see there that they still run monthly events for their accounting system. So the big peak there in yellow is our suspension run, where we suspend domains that haven't been paid. And the red peak is the deletion run that we run when domains haven't been paid for too long. I'm going to turn it over to Kofi, and he's going to carry on a bit in French.
Je ne suis pas comptable, madame.
Ah, j'ai compris. Ben, c'est ce que j'entends.
Merci, Dave, pour cette
présentation. Thank you, Dave, for your presentation. The new thing in the system is the interaction that there is between the different policy services, especially the editor, which is very strong, that will allow you to have implementation and test in the system to put together an EPP strict script for your client, for your clients. This is an innovation in the system, and we are available for your questions.
Some of the performance statistics for
The performance statistics for
70 milliseconds, delete is 72 milliseconds, and an update is 51 milliseconds for the month of September. And that is David and Kofi, and you can contact us on africanregistry.net. Thank you very much.
So, any questions? Mark.
Not a question, but a comment or a clarification. In the French to English translation, it came out that we had 700 domains. We do actually have 700,000 domains, not 700. David did try to clarify that as well.
Of course, it's not a matter of translation. It was his fault. Any other questions? MJ?
Thank you for the presentation. The Registry Pro Policy tool looks a very impressive tool, very well thought through, very good technology. Is any of the work that has gone into that going to be made available in a wider context, such as the list of what policy is configurable through it, the different options, any of these things at all, or even will any of the technology be available?
I think the idea is that we're going to publish a policy editing handbook, which shows all the policy that we've already written for the system, all the functions. The accounting system that we've got at the moment that we have an API into is OpenERP. So we've written all those functions, but if you choose a different financial backend, obviously, we can assist in integrating any system that you choose. But the idea is to release what we have in terms of documentation so that people can see what they can do with the system.
Okay. Thank you.
We also will release the policy as a... there is a definition of how the policy is laid out, and that will also be an open information. So if you choose to write your own policy editor, right, you are welcome to.
Oh, that's wonderful. Do you have a timetable for that, for the last piece?
As soon as possible.
Okay. Thank you. It's very good.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. So we come to the next item of the agenda, which is me. I'm going to shamelessly abuse the prerogative of the chair by holding a presentation that I actually wrote for the DNSSEC session on Wednesday, slightly differently moderated today. As you know, .NA is, or may not know, .NA is signed. I always say it's the only African TLD, CCTLD that is signed, and I don't consider .SC, which is running on the .org platform signed by Afilias and thus signed automatically, to be intrinsically signed. The point here is that it's not really that difficult. If a simple gynecologist, an elderly gynecologist, can do it, it cannot be that difficult. Little bit of background. You know .NA is one of the older CCTLDs, the third one in Africa after Egypt and South Africa. I have bragging rights as the third oldest or longest serving CCTLD manager is under continuous management. We have also continuous policies. We don't really change them much. We operate for a few years COCA tools on our own infrastructure, so not in the server that COCA has in Sydney. We do what I call serious anycasting. We have got 5 anycast providers: DynDNS, Nominum, PCH, IronDNS, and ISC. So we have never even heard about denial of service attack anymore. We were signed about a week before the Korea meeting. That was a year before the route. But not because we are so quick, because we have much less problems and much smaller level. They must do level 5, whereas we can do level 1. There is only one single production zone signed, which is my name. And then Mark Elkins from COSA had asked for one name to be delegated so he could play with it, which we've done. So there is 2 now. Big deal. A little bit about COCA tools. You all know that it's open source, at least for CCTLDs. It's being actively developed. They're looking at rolling out a version any time now that conforms to the ICANN requirements for GTLDs. Not that we as a CC need to do that, but it's a nice thing to have. It's extremely stable. We never had a problem. We have some small issues. Sometimes an update breaks something, so we
If we find it out, we email them. If Nigel finds it out, or Mark works with Nigel, finds it out, they email them. And then we usually get told update is ready within a day or two. I checked. It can do IPv6. We don't run it on an IPv6 able warehouse yet, but the hoster has, we've discussed it with them. They said they're going to switch the whole data center onto IPv6, and when they do it, they will put it on. It has an automated backup system, which is quite good for escrow, and automatic zone generation, which is important in the context here. It does not have key management support. In other words, the DNSSEC issue is, if I want, as a client owning lister.na, and if I use a registrar, I don't necessarily want the registrar to have my key. So there must be a system that we can upload this key separately for those who want it, and that at the moment cannot be done, so we have to do it manually. With two zones, the effort is fairly marginal. We provision up to now the top level, the second level, .na, with a Perl script that I've written before we did this. It takes the zone from CocaTools, it signs it, it SCPs it to the master, it gips it, it gzips it there, it archives it, it increments the date, so we know every day we have 24 versions. If something fails, we can go back version by version easily. It doesn't reload the master. The master looks whether there is a new version and pulls it and does that. There is policy reasons behind this into what I don't really need to get into, and it runs hourly. The master then sees there is a new, every hour checks, is a new zone, compares the old sign, looks whether it's much bigger or smaller than the previous one. We can put a marker at the end to see that it's completely transmitted, and reloads the zone and sends a notify. The old com.na zone, about which I want to talk about, is exactly the same. It just doesn't sign. Okay, it's unsigned. It just gets SCP'd and to our master, and the master then installs it. What we've done now is we have created, which we didn't have, a hidden master on the registrar portal that cannot be accessed by anybody that is not registered. We run bind 9. It's the Ubuntu long-term support version 8.04, if I'm not mistaken. And we upgrade whenever we get a... we run this service landscape that checks whether there is an update available. We update religiously whenever the thing comes in. CocaTools without contab in itself can now write the zones hourly and can even reload bind. Now, since we are hidden master, PCH, which used to be a secondary but is now the master, gets notified. We promoted PCH from slave to master. A little bit coordination between them and our old master was required, but that took a day or two because of time zone changes more than anything else. The next problem was that we had to figure out T6, so some study was required. PCH does the transfer with T6. We exchange the KeySig with signed and encrypted GPG mail, so that's fairly secure. PCH signs the zone and notifies the old slaves and the old master, which is now a slave, and there you go. Learning curve. Okay, T6, if you don't use it, you have to figure this out. That takes about an afternoon. Okay. There is manuals that you can read, so I don't want to enter what the F stands for. Process itself, it's easy. You promote PCH to a master. You tell the secondaries, you sit down and you wait for the lights to flicker and the zone is signed. It's a matter of trust, but the PCH platform has been described in Singapore, and we trust it. It's not a matter of whether we trust it. It's a matter of whether we can convince the bank's risk departments that this is that fits their standard. And it just works. Okay, it's only level 1, so we don't do anything but level 1, so we cannot say whether it works on level 5, but started on a Monday, was working on a Thursday because of time zone changes, and then the wrong TC key was put in on the one thing, and so a little bit coordination required is easy. In summary, you set up a hidden master, you configure it to notify PCH and to allow the zone transfer from PCH. You must use TSIG. You coordinate with PCH a little bit. We delegate it to PCH because PCH then also does any casting, so it makes sense to not just... They could hand it back to us and we do it, but it makes sense to have them on it because it's an anycast thing and it's free of charge, to especially to small CCTLDs, so it's not a problem. They send us the DS record. Then you just sit back and wait, and the day or so, next reload, two, three reloads later, it's there. And then we officially promoted it also to master, just to make sure that the former master now knows it's a slave and pulls off it. We had one little problem. We wanted to do .co.na, but there was a small little problem because they hadn't generated a key yet for us. They had one for COM because that's what we spoke about it in Singapore. So we then did that. The setup for COM and CO.NI is slightly different, but it worked without any problem. Obviously, next step is you need to talk to your clients. I had an opportunity to speak to the internet banking manager of my own bank in a different setup and figured out a very nice, easy-to-understand web page from Afilias, which I then incorporated into a letter which I gave to him, and he mentioned, we have heard about DNSSEC somehow, somewhere, sometime. You must sow the seeds. You must take one client at a time and see what happens. If we get 100,000 clients or whatever wanting to have this, then we can look at repatriation. The key generation must then be done in a different manner, I think. OpenDNSSEC comes to mind. That works for UK, and I mean it works for some large zones. That means it's workable. You must then invest into key generation hardware, which is the minimal version, costs about £100, £150, not a big deal. And it has implications with regard to the facility. Our facility is secure, but you must have this on an audited level that you can describe whether you want to need a camera inside and these kind of things. I don't really think it's necessary, but you must go with the flow what the client's risk departments suggest. And then there is these obvious cost implications. Okay, obviously we have to thank somebody because we wouldn't have been able to do this without Vicky Schrester, Robert Martin Lejeune, who is here, and Peter Loscher. I mentioned on the bottom Laurie's Law. Mike Laurie was the guy who registered .za and influenced African internet connectivity significantly by helping whoever asked. That's a little bit what I looked up to, and I have always tried to help whoever asked. And he very early on in 92, when we were still using UUCP, he says, you don't need an outside expert, you need a friend on the other end of the link, on the telephone link, actually. And that worked very well. If I have a question, I write an email to Peter Loscher or one of these guys. They come back, and after about an afternoon, I've started to understand what they actually mean. It's not because they're so clever, it's because I'm so simple. And I also deal with other things in the majority of my time. So it's simple. So I'm not saying that this is the only way to go. INDNS offers a similar service, but this is the one that I was aware of when I started it. And it works. It's simple to set up. I think it is secure. And I think if you really want to have a go at signing a zone, there's just no excuse any longer.
No questions? Any questions? Okay, the next would then be Andre Philipp, and he will talk a little bit about cleanup of DNS
domains.
Okay, good morning, everyone. My name is Andrei Filip, and I'm from registry.cz, domain name registry for Czech Republic. And as you now heard some experience from a small registry with a limited number of DNS assigned domains, I would like to share with you another view from a registry that you know has a large number of DNS assigned domains. I did this presentation and the project with cooperation with Andrei Suri, so that's why I put two names on the presentation. Unfortunately, Andrei Suri cannot be with us here. He's in Prague currently. But because we have both first name Andrei, and many people have problems with that, like Eberhard, for example, we created an email address, andrei@nic.cz, for him to make him his life easier. So you can send an email to andrei@nic, and we will somehow handle that.
It wasn't actually me.
Okay. So let's back to the presentation. So what is the situation in Czech Republic? We have about 850,000 domain, more a little bit more than that. And currently, we have roughly 145,000 domains. So basically, it means we have 70% of all domains is assigned, and that is probably the highest number in the world. So quite high penetration. We really worked hard on that, and we are very proud of that. If you want to check the current numbers, they are at our websites, www.nic.cz. To explain you the situation, how this is done, there's no magic behind that. We have some very active registrars. Currently, we have three that sign all domains that are on their own name servers by default. So it's Active24, WebPuria, and OneSolution. So those guys create the majority of that large number. And DNSSEC is quite well communicated in your country. It's quite a topic. It had very good media coverage. And we are continuing working with the registrars because we would like to have more people on board. And we know that some more are coming to or joining the business. But DNSSEC is not just done by those three registrars. We have 11 registrars that have more than 100 signed domains each. And those 11 registrars, they cover 90% of market share. So basically, all the major registrars somehow do support DNSSEC in our country. So it's quite well, it works quite well in our country. And because we have so many signed domains, it created some problems, of course. But before I will go there, let me introduce you our database model, because it's necessary for you to understand what the problem we are dealing with. So we have a object domain. No, doesn't work. Anyway. Okay, I will just describe it. So we have object domain. It has some registrant, some domain owner, and then we have several administrative contacts. And then we have another object called NSSET and KeySet. NSSET is just a list of name servers with a technical contact, and KeySet is a list of DNSSEC keys with a technical contact. So why we do that? It's because more domains can share more KeySet and more NSSET. So basically, it's a support for the registrars to make bulk DNSSEC signing. So, thousands of domains can share one key set. So if the registrars wants to make a key rollover, it just updates one object and everything is okay. So the registrar doesn't have to, send a lot of requests to a registry. So that's just for you to understand. If I will talk about key set, what actually that means in our database. Now, the problem comes. As we have a large number of signed domains, some of them became bogus. There is a lot of operations that can affect the function of signed domains. The majority of those problems come from transfers between registrars. Some registrars are really negligent, they're really ignorant. There is also some small percentage of errors. And of course, as the absolute number of domain of signed domain is increasing, there is also increasing the absolute number of failures of bogus domain. And the main problem, the problem became very urgent when some ISP started to validate DNSSEC. And those guys told us, you know, we would like to start DNSSEC validation, but look, if we start it, some customers will start to call us and tell us, you, this domain doesn't work at you, but works on your competitor. So why should we do that? And we said, okay, so we will somehow work with that. And we started a first round. So first of all, we changed a little bit our EPP scheme. We reset the secure delegation, so we deleted the reference to keyset when the name server was changed. So if someone changes name servers and wants to keep the keyset reference, he or she needs to explicitly re-add the secure delegation. So that was the first change, and it helps a lot. It helps in some cases, usually simple transfers between registrars, transfer from DNSSEC ever, DNS hosting provider to some DNSSEC ignorant provider. But sometimes it didn't help. Some registrar has so smart system that if they detected some deletion, they edit it again, or some registrar just transfer domain without transferring DNS, and the old registrar just stopped signing the domain, but the record was kept and everything was kept. So some still problems were appearing, and that's why we went for the second round, and we created an automated system that was detecting those bogus domain. And the algorithm is slightly described on the page on the screen you can see. So if there is a DS record or a reference to DNS key, and the name servers can be reached, so it's not a classical lame delegation, and the validation fails for 5 consecutive days, that there's no DNS key in the zone, or bogus DNS signature, or DNS signature has expired, and also the trace from a root zone fails, and this, these all conditions are met for 5 consecutive days, we somehow, mark this delegation as problematic. And this counter is reset if any condition is met, so if something changes, of course. So what we do with those bogus domains? We ask the registrar what they really want to do with that, so they can decide. They can either receive a list of validation failures, which honestly just minority decided to do, or let us handle the failures, delete the key set is basically meant by that. So that's what majority agreed. Okay, just please clean it for us and delete those key sets. So what we do, we automatically delete reference to key set with a lot of domains, those mass hosting. It's probably some failure that the customer just kept the key set and changed something or whatever. So those are really deleted automatically. And the rest is handled usually manually by our help desk. They usually call the domain name holder, and in 99% of cases, the domain holder says, okay, if it doesn't work, just please do it for me, and that's all. So we delete it manually, but anyway, very, very often. And of course, we have some safeguards in the script, so if there is more than 100 secure delegations to delete, we stop the script, or any error or unknown condition, of course. So what is the result on some boring numbers? By the end of August, we deleted about 3,000 bogus DNSSEC domains. I mean, the references to keyset, of course, the domains are kept and running. And we start a discussion with the registrars, and some of them found bugs in their system, so they fixed those bugs. And it helped a lot the situation. During September, we detected about 1,200 bogus DNSSEC domains. And, again, some registrars said, oh, there's one more thing to fix. Thank you for that. And as I said, the registrants that were contacted mostly don't care. You know, they are not really aware of what's going on. So, some minority really fixed some problems. The majority just said, okay, do whatever you do, but please keep my domain running. And since October, the situation is better. We delete about 10 DNS queue references a day, so it's quite stable number. You know, in 145,000 domains, it's quite acceptable ratio. So that's the current stage. So that's all, and maybe one for forecast for the future. As I said, we are currently slightly below 150, and because some more registrars, you know, started to implement DNSSEC automatic signing, and because DNSSEC is really that really matters in Czech Republic, so we would like to be at a 250,000 by the end of this year, but maybe it's too ambitious, we'll see. So, but that's forecast, and that's based on information provided by the registrar. So if we will not do that, it's not my fault. It depends really on our partners. But I think it's quite feasible. So let's see. So we are growing. Some conclusion. Please, if you will go to a large number of signed domains, accept some problems. Some domains will become bogus. And this will be a problem for validating ISPs, so I'm sure they will talk to you about that. So we started this automatic removal of DNS queue references, which is sort of deletion of DNS records in many of your registries. And and of course some marketing stuff. Czech Republic is the most secure DNS republic in the world, and we keep going. So thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you very much. Why is there such an interest in the Czech Republic about DNSSEC? That I would like to know, because maybe we can learn from that.
Oh, it's of course definitely the activity of the registry. We took DNSSEC as one of the core topics, main topics, and we are very active in that area. So, I'm going to speak on Wednesday about that during the DNSSEC workshop. We are very active in the area. We created such topics, so that's the reason. You know, there is nobody who can really start it up. We believe that the only person who can start is either government or a registry. So we rather started proactively working on that.
Okay, any question? Luis?
Luis Espinosa from .cr. Andre, this work looking for registrars to find the problems generate a lot of administrative work, I think. And in the future, if you increase the DNSSEC registries, and maybe these bogus or these problems increase too, then this can generate a lot of administrative work, contact the registrars, and because I think it's not possible to automate this contact to find the problem with the registrars. Then do you expect this administrative work fixing this, but increase in time, or in time will be fixed by itself, teaching the people how to manage this?
Good question. As I said, the number of the problems is decreasing as we started to build that issue. And if we are talking currently about 10 domains a day, that's really nothing, you know, because we have 24/7 customer support, and we do actively call the domain holders if their domain is going to expire or is after expiration date, actually. So we do anyway some thousands of calls a day. So, you know, at 10 domains a day, it's basically nothing. It doesn't really makes our load higher. So it's okay. 10 domains a day, I think it's feasible. And I expect to probably increase it a little bit because, you know, as the number of signed domains will increase, it will increase. But if we have 7% of signed domains and we are about 10 domains a day, we can go to 100. And again, that's really nothing for our customer support department. It's peanuts.
Mark.
Mark Elkins from South Africa. When you realize that something's going wrong, you have a countdown of around about 5 days or something before you remove the DS records. Do you do anything kind of clever in the meantime, like lower the time to live on those DS records so that when you do remove them, they sort of really disappear quickly?
Not really, and it's a good question. I can't remember what's the current TTL of DS records, but no, we don't, and it's an interesting idea. Maybe we could discuss that further. We did this automating system completely outside the zone generation software. We didn't want to touch something that's very stable and stable for ages. So that's why we developed it completely outside the current structure. But that's a clever idea. We can discuss that. Yeah. Thank you for that.
The software, is it open source?
The software that makes the deletion? You mean the software that makes the... It's so tiny script that definitely we can publish that if there is an interest. I have it here in my laptop. It's a few lines in shell in bash. You know, it's pretty easy to implement.
And all comments in the Czech language.
I don't think there is any comment, unfortunately. It's so, you know, if you are a good programmer, you don't have to make comments because everybody who sees your code understands. So.
Well, at least if the comments are not there, then it's not difficult to mix them up like you, Fred. Okay, any other questions? All right, thank you very much. We are going to change the agenda slightly because Mohammed from .ng would like to attend the opening ceremony, so we move him forward a little bit so that he can be released. He's going to speak about .ng's experiences
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Mohammed Rodman from Nigerian Internet Registration Association. Okay. A brief history here. We took over the registry in 2007, you know, from the former operators of the registry. The organization was formed, the Nigerian Internet Registration Association, which is supposed to be what is it called, membership-based organization, non-profit organization, to take over the operations of the registry from a former government parastata called the Nigerian Internet Development Agency, NITDA. So when we took over, it was actually a two-hour registry model, with a registrar-registrant model. We had to look at it, review it, and adapt the three-hour model, which is the registrar and registrant model. We also looked at the various softwares, registry softwares out there, you know, the commercial ones and the non-commercial ones, like the affiliates, the Newster, and all that. We also reviewed the non-commercial ones, like the OpenReg, SRS from .nz here, Fred from .cz, the last presenter, .br, CodDev, and Coca. Based on all that, we evaluated our needs, and based on the policies we required at that time, we narrowed down to Coca and adapted Coca as our registry software. And it has been discussed about the operations of the Coca registry. We also have a public who is on port 43. We run a public who is services on who is .nic.net.ng. And we have an EPP interface, which was non-existent at that time. You know, it was the other protocol, the old protocol before that, and we are using the EPP now with all the registrars connected to it, either via the web interface or the EPP interface, and they do their registration seamlessly. We have an escrow backup with COCA as well in New Zealand. We have the best practices model of the stealth primary server. We have SSH and user restrictions for all our users into the registry. Okay. We have some monitoring softwares. This is the model we are currently using. We are evolving because it's a small registry that has about 25,000 domains registered. And we are moving forward to the next level because we had some issues with the current model we have. We have some electrical issues in Nigeria due to power outages. And we designed a better model, which has now been implemented, which we have the, you can see double redundancy here. I doubt if any of these registries have that. We have the motorized automatic voltage regulators. We have dual source of that power source. We have automatic transfer switches for each server. It means that each server will have feeds from two multiple automatic transfer switches because each server has dual power pack. In case the power pack fails, the server continues to run. In case the automatic transfer switch fails, we continue to run. We have the inverter as the top level there. And even if the inverter fails, you know, the UPS feeds the system. So it's an elaborate design on that. And the system we have right now is not really that complex, you know, with firewalls, IDNs, and all that. But we really want to go into the next level of replicating the site. We have moved all the equipments into one particular site, so we don't have a site redundancy. In case we have failure in that, the only last option is to use the escrow backup in New Zealand and have a new registry set up, and that will now be a downtime of...
Translator has asked you to slow down a little bit. They can't come up, can't carry, keep up with your translation.
Okay, sorry, please. I'm a fast speaker. So they're having issues with the translation. Okay. So we are working on dual sites right now. We've already started the configurations. The servers have been divided into two different locations. In case there is a problem with the main site, we are going to have a backup site. Between the two sites, we already established a fiber link of 1 gig capacity. We also chose the site that has a mast. We also have a backup link of a microwave link. In case we have issues with the fiber link between the two sites, you know, the backup link will take over. And based on that design as well, we have right now only one ISP with another ISP connected to the registry with demand service on demand services. In case we have issue with the first ISP, we bring up the second ISP. But based on the new model we are working with, we want to make sure that the two ISPs, in fact, are running simultaneously. And we make sure that the two ISPs are not getting services from at the same point, you know, in terms of the level of the ISPs. In Nigeria, we have about three submarine cables that have landed at our shores. So we make sure that at least there is redundancy on that. We are not taking services from an ISP where two ISPs that are taking services from one submarine cable provider. In case the submarine cable provider is down, it means the two ISPs are down as well. So we have that. We're running our BGP, you know, and with our block. And we have an online and offsite backups, you know, weekly backups based on what the last speaker mentioned. You know, it generates zones every 1 hour and saves the files there, and we normally pack them up daily and weekly. Based on this design, formerly we have only one firewall and one intrusion detection system. But based on this design, we have the main firewall that is stateful firewall with intrusion detection. We want to put an advanced equipment there. We also make sure that the switches that are connecting all the servers are secured. We are also having firewalls and intrusion detection on each single host of the servers that are running the registry and the NSA services. So, and for the registrars, you know, we have multiple authentication. Each registrar will must have an IP restriction from a particular host to connect to the EPP services, or he must use tokens, you know, to make sure that that person is authenticated properly before logging into the registry. We have a network monitoring, as you can see it there. We have the PRTG, we have PERSER, and we are monitoring the network 24/7. The next one is the secondary name servers. When we took over the registry, at that time, I think there was only one or two operators as the Anycast services of the secondary name servers. We now got, at that time, discussed with ICANN and put six name servers. You know, and the six name servers are there listed, with each one of them having any Anycast services, sorry. And we had some issues in 2009, I think, when the person that was in charge of these services actually passed away. And nobody was aware of how really the registry operates at that time. We had to take over, you know, discuss with all the secondary DNS providers for the zone update, because we had some failures at that time. And the last one of them, the NSB, which is a service provided by GoDaddy, we have been talking to them, you know, for the zones transfer, and it seems they are adamant. They don't really want to assist. They were asking us for the support code, which we don't have. And we realize that that is not good when you have only one person in charge of the registry and he has access to all the passwords and all the codes. If he passes away, what happens? So we had to really discuss with ICANN and now remove the NSB. So the NSB is no longer there, existing as one of our secondaries. We have only five now, and with each one of them having Anycast services. One of them out of the five is a paid service by Dynamic Network Services. So they are having Anycast services of our two servers. And based on the small size of the registry, and I've been actually involved with the registry long ago, and I'm managing the Internet Exchange Point of Nigeria, we decided to collaborate and cooperate and have NIRA. NIRA has the exchange as a strategic partner where we can synergize our resources. We are on the verge of concluding, of signing the memorandum of understanding between the NIRA and the Internet Exchange Point. Because based on that, we will share the facility of the exchange point. The exchange point is there. We have a center that is monitored 24/7 with all the facilities you can think of in a world-class facility, FM200, GAS, fire-resistant walls, and all that. So the servers are already there. This is the second site I was mentioning that has a backup link, I mean, the fiber link and the radio link between this site and the other site. And we are also working with NIRA at the exchange point towards the establishment of the FRUIT server in Nigeria, the Anycast copy. And we hope that we'll conclude on that before the end of this year. We've gone advanced stages. We've installed all the systems. What we're waiting for is Peter Losch from ISC to do the final configurations. And we're also trying to see if we can work with ICANN. We've been having a series of discussions with them regarding the L route, and we are hoping we can also conclude on that by early next year. And we are also soliciting, if any of you operators out there have a good experience with any of the route server operators, we would want to really get a copy, you know, another copy in Nigeria. I think that's all. Thank you very much for your time. Questions, please.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Is there a root server instance in Nigeria already?
Not yet.
What version? Sorry, Mark.
A curiosity. You obviously had your own policy in your old software. When you moved to Cocoa, was there a big change, or Cocoa just fitted in?
Policy-wise, I think what happened was there were only a few domains that were registered in the old system, because it was difficult registering domains through the government parastatal because of government bureaucracies. So all we had to do was just move all the domains into a particular account and tell the registrants, sending them emails, to now register the domains through our new registrars free of charge for a particular period of time. So I think in terms of policies, it wasn't that much difficult.
It was a data cleanup issue, if I recall correctly.
You said?
It was a data cleanup issue mainly, if I correctly.
Yes, some of the values out there, because I was not actually really involved in the migration at that time. You know, the person I was talking about did all that, and I don't know what his experience is on that.
No, he communicated with me about it. It was
okay.
A bit of a drama to, like when you transition to a registry that has properly constructed and designed database, you have to have certain rules. And that was for everybody who does that, especially if it's a bigger database, it's a bit of a drama. If you have a few hundred, you can manually do it. If you have a few thousand, it becomes to start an issue. I think the idea is you tell the clients to handle it themselves, give them free access to re-register, then they're responsible for the data, which they are anyway.
Yeah.
Any other questions? We are running a little bit ahead of time. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
In our agenda point, I had in half an hour for change of venue, which we are not going to do, so we'll have a little bit of a tea break now. Because I expect Kim is here, who can give a presentation. If you want to give it now, we can have the tea break afterwards, or we can have the tea break first. The host presenter, I don't know, Alex Corentin, is he here? He is not. He's scheduled, and Mohammed Diop, I know, he is not here, so we'll hope they arrive in time. Okay, so we'll reconvene at 11:30, like on the agenda.